my fellow Americans. Hey, I hope you're all keeping safe and secure and everyone is fine and everyone that you care for is healthy, especially during this troubling lockdown time. This week, I'm joined by a former Fundamentals contributor, Jorge. He's a good friend of mine. He loves comic books, so we thought we would just take a kiddie pool deep dive, if you will, into the importance of comics and how they happen to often reflect a lot of what we're going through. So especially during this time, we thought it'd be a fun little episode. So I hope you enjoy it. And as always, you know, stay safe and be well.
Yes, cool. So this is An Englishman's Guide to Being a Better American. And this time around, I'm having a very nice conversation, hopefully. It's going to be huge with my good friend, one of the very first Americans I ever met. Mr. Jorge,
hello.
You are my go-to for comics.
Aw,
I mean, you should take it as a compliment. You used to contribute to Fundamentals, and you always have like weird picks to kind of like throw my way. Like those Moon Knight comics you got me were fantastic. Was not expecting to fall in love with a character that hard, but so yeah. How did you kind of, I guess a little bit of a background, when did you start this love affair you have with comics?
Well, when I was a kid, I definitely liked comics a lot, you know, but as a kid, you don't really have the mentality to collect, to sort of, you know, think of the future where comics are going to go. I just tried what I liked. And one of the things that stuck with me early on was the X-Men. You know, with X-Men, it was just, you know, you weren't limited to one character. There were so many, and they had so many different powers, so many different personalities. So I felt like almost a little family. I did fall out of touch getting older, you know, as I kind of read less. But recently, like in the next few years, actually more close to when I first met you, I realized, you know, hey, I miss comics. I've missed so much of it. You know, I've read a little over the years and I'd like to see what's still out there. So lo and behold, I spent my hard-earned cash on so many titles that I shouldn't have.
Yes. And then you go and buy the trade.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's right. You're being shamed. Would you?
I like single issues.
I don't like the ads, man. I'm not signing up for Marvel's Visa card. Because that's what it is. They want you to sign up for that, so you'll buy more of their stuff.
There's so many ads. I mean, the only good thing is if you're a DC fan, you really don't need to buy anything in the past anymore because DC Universe has it all. Literally, my subscription, I've not bought a DC comic since except for Sandman because DC Vertical doesn't count apparently.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that DC membership, by the way. It came in handy, didn't we? We went to the premiere of Titans.
Yeah. And we got invited. Was that part of? No, that was Comic-Con, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Titan things was awesome, though. I was pleasantly surprised at how amazing that was.
Yeah. You went in with some things bubbling in your head.
Yeah. Teen Titans are important to a lot of comic fans. They're just one of those teams that, you know, people they're very protective of it.
Yeah, I noticed once they gave you the free popcorn, like you calmed down, you were like, yeah, this is going to be good. It's going to be...
Yes, I was hangry. Food will always calm me down.
So would you say that MCU is what kind of brought you back to comics, or was it just you were missing something?
Well, I would be lying if I say that MCU didn't help give me the push that I wanted to go back into comics. You know, half of the fun of watching an MCU movie is trying to figure out which comics it's based on. And whether you already know it, it's great. But when you don't and you really, really want to find out, it just makes it even more fun to watch. I'm not one of those people that, I can be, you know, with like shows like Game of Thrones and stuff like that. I'm very, very picky when it comes to what they change and what they decide not to include. But with comics, since it's a shared universe, a shared effort, I'm okay with the changes and being able to research what I liked about those films into what comics they're based on is just even greater.
Like, yeah, but they also have like the get out of jail kind of card of like, well, it's a multi-universe. Like, you know, there's so many little different things going on.
Yeah, DC does that a little more givenly, especially with the Arrowverse, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I like that with the past Crisis and Infinite Earths crossover that they pulled from so many different mediums of television and movies for the DC universe. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like the Easter eggs in the MCU. It's kind of like,
yeah, those are fun too. Easter eggs are always fun in general, to be honest.
Yeah, but that's what pulled me back into comics. I think I'd just seen Guardians, and yeah, and I suddenly had a desire, because I think in the first scene when Quill is dancing, he comes across a skull that looks a lot like Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah. I love Beta Ray Bill. That happened in Thor 3 as well.
Yeah, and I was just like, man, I miss that horse god. So that's what got me back into it. That and Scotty Young. I really liked his artwork.
You know, I almost picked up, and I only didn't because I didn't know how comics are going to be for the next few weeks because of what's going on. Mm. But now that I know that Diamond Distributors is no longer shipping out new comics, I was going to start Young Academy, Strange Academy. And Scotty Young is primarily doing the art for that, and it looks awesome, but now I can't.
Yeah, if you go to his website, you can get a variant of the first issue.
Ooh.
Yeah. He's awesome. You should follow him and subscribe to everything he does. But yeah, we're in the middle of something. We're in the middle of a COVID and 19. I can't wait for 21. and I guess as an Easter egg, you mentioned liking Easter eggs. There is possibly one person listening to this that will appreciate this Easter egg. Hi, Alec. There you go. It's there. But yeah, I really... You're a big history guy, which is why I kind of also thought this would be an interesting topic. Just the idea of how comics mirror a lot of things that happen in real life, from like Cap's creation, Iron Man as well, like both coming from big, big wars and events in history. Do you think that aids comics, especially like Marvel, because they're based in the real world? Do you think that detracts from kind of getting lost in the medium?
I think it aids because, well, with any work of literature, be it comics, books, nonfiction, or fiction, you always want to try to pull the reader in by showing them something of the world that they know. So take Cap, for example. When Cap was first created, I mean, Captain America number one obviously wasn't his first appearance, but his first comic is literally him punching Hitler, and this was made before we entered the war. You know, we didn't enter the war till what, 41, and this was created in 40. So yeah. It just shows the mindset of the rest of America, because that's, you know, where comics primarily came from at the time. The mindset of America that fascism or Nazism is something to be destroyed. So to dedicate a single comic just to punching the leader of a country who we're not even at war with yet is sending a pretty big statement of how the mindset of readers at the time looked at it. I mean, even the comic was distributed for the soldiers who were stationed wherever they were, just, you know, to have a quick laugh, a quick read, and then toss it. But
I really like, I mean, I love that image. Not just because it's so absurd, but the whole idea, because I never got into Captain America because he was too righteous.
Yeah,
and then when I was looking into a bit more about his origin, did you know what the original name was?
I don't, actually.
Super American.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't know that, because that is pretty funny. Super American.
Super American. Punching Hitler in the face. that would have been weird.
That's a little bit on the nose.
As was the punch, just and then, like, and yeah, obviously Iron Man was created in the Vietnam War.
I believe so. Well, no, he was not too far off from Captain, I don't think.
Yeah, but his origin of
yeah
where he came from. But then they revamped it, and then I'm pretty sure they redid it to the Iraqi War, which kind of, how does that, do you, I don't like it when they suddenly make a big change to an origin or any like kind of weird, obscure differences. Do you, does this, is that something that irritates you? Cause you, I know you're more of a purist about comics.
Well, you know, there are times when you need to realize that the generation is shifting. So, you know, there's always going to be fully grown adults like you and I who are going to read comics no matter what age we are, but not, you know, the demographic for comic books at the time was mainly teenagers, maybe preteens, maybe young adults. But you always want to keep things fresh. So I kind of get why sometimes they revamp the origins, you know, and try to keep it as similar as possible. But at the same time, you have to realize you're creating holes in the continuity, which comics have come a long way in trying to repair, you know, DC with their Crisis on Infinite Earths from the 1980s, Marvel's many, many, many resets.
Yeah. When they killed an entire universe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Poor Ultimates.
Yeah, I liked Ultimates. Ultimates was my favorite Spider-Man.
I liked kind of some of the Ultimates, not a lot of them. But as far as revamps, complete soft reboots go, the X-Men one currently has been phenomenal, especially just the idea of how they revamped so many times they took into account. It was almost on the scale of Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is pretty amazing for something modern.
Okay. You touched on like the events. Do you keep up to date with every event that happens in the, because I find that it used to be obviously just a collection of stories in one series and then it was done. And now it's, you've got to read Daredevil issue 16, Moon Knight 7.
Tie-ins can be such a pain in the ass, especially, you know, I love Marvel equally as much as DC, and I feel like I'm not trying to pick on Marvel, but Marvel is the worst when it comes to crossover events because, here's an example. So the most recent one that I read, which I was very excited for, I was a huge fan of Jason Aaron's run on Thor, on Mighty Thor with Jane Foster. Mm-hmm. And for 3 years, he was alluding to this War of the Realms that was going to happen. And then her comic line finished, and it's like, oh, what's going to happen with the War of the Realms? It was coming, but, you know, it was a year in the process. So I was like, oh, please don't tell me this is going to be one of those. I was actually delightfully surprised that there weren't too many tie-ins, and not all of them were necessary. See, I don't mind tie-ins, but when you make them necessary,
yeah,
it's when it gets a little overboard. DC, on the other hand, you know, they have their issues too when it comes to their crossovers, but at least they're a little more neatly packed. You know, you don't need to read every single title that's out there.
Do you remember Civil War 2?
I actually didn't read Civil War 2.
Oh, so lucky. So lucky.
I read the first one and all 150 of its freaking tie-ins. Ugh.
Yeah.
I'll get that time back.
I like the first Civil War. I read the second one. And it was the end. I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but yeah, it was the whole thing was really well told. And then it gets to the final issue and you're like, fuck this. Just fuck
language this. Cam.
Fuck them. super American to you, which I will be one day. You and I, before we started recording, when we were off air, as we like to call it in the business, we were discussing X-Men and the COVID. You mentioned that there was a virus previous that was similar to the kind of, it mirrored a real world event.
Yep. The Legacy virus. So any self-respecting X-Men fan knows what the Legacy virus is.
I obviously don't.
It was a very, very, very major event in X-Men history. There are tons of them, obviously. But at the time that it came out, well, that the books came out, AIDS was at its height, you know. And like I said, like most people think it's not actually canon. I mean, it's a very nice thought. And Stan Lee has, you know, alluded to the point that, you know, some of why he created X-Men was due to the civil rights movements, the LGBTQ, movements.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always get tongue twisted when I try to say that. So, it's only natural that he created this, well, not him, but the story writers at the time created this virus to kind of show that, you know, AIDS needed to be taken seriously, you know.
Yeah.
You know, at the start of the of that epidemic, you know, it was taken very lightly because of it was attacking one demographic. It was attacking gay men and gay women. And when the comics came out with the legacy virus, it primarily just attacked mutants. But then as time went on, they realized that also straight male and women were also getting it. So comics moved accordingly. Everyone started getting it. The fact is, though, when they decided to write into this, they had to see that you need to watch the world around you. You need to move your story according to, because people need to be able to relate.
Yeah.
You know, the X-Men were created because there was entire groups of people at the time in the 60s that were being persecuted, that were being prejudiced against, and they needed an outlet. They needed to see themselves in something.
Yeah.
They needed almost their own identity. They do have their own identity. Never want to say that they don't, but they needed something to relate to that.
Well, I think I think kind of echoing that, there's a truly haunting scene in the first X-Men movie where Magneto is being ripped away from his parents at a concentration camp. Mm-hmm. And knowing that was his origin, I mean, it kind of brought that to the forefront, especially in a movie that I guess I don't think about it a lot. But as a kid, seeing that on screen, I was just like, damn, like, it was really that bad. And it just added an extra weight to what you already knew. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that they try and keep it more grounded as opposed to living in Metropolis. So I have a theory, because Marvel like always does terrible events, in my opinion. So this whole epidemic or pandemic or whatever we're calling it, I have a feeling that Marvel is going to relaunch the Terrigen Mist with the Inhumans.
I hope not. As much as I try to love all of X-Men's history, the whole X versus Inhumans was not very, very good.
Yeah, it says a lot when they take one of the mainstay Inhumans in Lockjaw and essentially like fuck him off to Jersey to hang out with Kamala Khan all the time. Like, it's really, they just took all of the good Inhumans in one and then moved him over. His comic book series looked fun.
Yeah, Black Bolt is actually still around. He's in the X-Men reboot. He got picked up by the Shi'ar Empire and he's Imperium, and he's kind of just like hanging around. He was in the most recent X-Men title.
Okay.
So, it's nice to see him live.
Has anyone brought him in for questioning?
Nope. He's just kind of doing his thing. Gladiator keeps him under check now. If you're like me and you're a huge fan of Namor, you equally love Gladiator because he's basically the same person, just space version. I love Gladiator. I love Namor. They're such dicks.
I am. See, that's more Fantastic Four X-Men world, and that's not really my cup of tea. And I know that you've tried to get me into X-Men. You lent us House of M, which I never read.
Which you should, because it's amazing.
Well, I'm pretty sure at this point we gave it back to you. That's my excuse. If we haven't, then I will give it back to you. Cool. So if you had three comics that to someone, you don't know anything about them, you just want to give them a break, especially in this crappy time, what three comics would you go for? And you can even branch out and just say characters instead. And
yeah, I mean, you know, I would. It depends. Like, if I just want someone to give someone a quick read. Unfortunately, I don't read a lot of quick reads. I read a lot of like longer storylines. But if you have the time,
which we do.
Number one, first and foremost, will be a non Marvel, non DC comic, Image Comics, The Wicked and Divine. It wrapped up a couple months ago. It's the entire series is in trade already. I think there's like maybe 3 or 4 one shots and a Christmas special that you could pick up at, you could probably order online actually, but it's phenomenal. It's a nice break from the superhero archetype, you know.
Okay.
If you've never heard of Wicked and Divine, a quick rundown is it's every like 50 something years, 12 teenagers are chosen. They're given the powers of certain gods that have existed in the past. They get fame, they get fans, they basically become like pop stars, but they only have 2 years to live. So it's a big drama. It touches almost every social issue from the UK, especially because that's where it's based out of. You know, Kieron Gillen wrote it and James McKelvey. I actually got to meet them at Comic-Con, which is really nice. They signed a couple of my issues.
The Gillian, he wrote a really cool Star Wars Marvel piece.
He's a very good writer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
it's cool. I'm pretty sure they relaunched with him when Star Wars came back to being popular.
Yeah. One of my, another Kieron Gillen that I want to talk about is one of my favorite X-Men characters of all time is Hope Summers. So if you have time to read her entire origin story, which is a couple of trades, but it's one of my favorites, it does start with House of M. He did write her solo series that took place after X-Men Second Coming called Generation Hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pretty fun. It's a fun read. It's not overly serious like the rest of her origin was, you know, like Messiah Complex, Second Coming. But if you have the time as well, her original series, you know, which is, I think, House of M, Messiah Complex, Cable, Volume 1 through 5, and then Second Coming, it's absolutely phenomenal. It's one of my favorite arcs ever in. And then a third, let me give DC some love.
You don't have to.
Something a little more modern, or something a little more closed without any major events would definitely have to be Benjamin Percy's Green Arrow run.
Knew it.
Which is by far my favorite thing that DC has written in the last 5 years. You know, it went on for 3 years. He wrote the first 48 issues. Then he dropped off, unfortunately. The next two issues were pretty good. They were written by the Benson sisters, who are really, really good as well.
He moved on to Nightwing afterwards, right?
He did a couple of issues for Nightwing, and then he moved over to Marvel. He's currently writing X-Force and Wolverine, which I'm both reading, and they're both phenomenal as well.
Yeah, I read the one he did where it was essentially the Court of Owls. Court of Owls?
Oh, yeah, the Court of Owls.
They were using technology against people. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Hackers.
I like his style of writing. And the thing with the Green Arrow series that he did is that he had Juan Ferreira on his art team. And modern-wise, he's my favorite artist. He did a couple of War of the Realm issues, and he did take over Punisher Kill Crew, which was a little, not a sequel, but it sprung out of the pages of War of the Realms for Marvel.
Okay.
But he's a phenomenal artist.
When you were explaining the second pick, I was sitting here because you were like, you said Hope Summers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. Summers is Cyclops' last name. But yeah. I'm pretty sure she has something to do with Cable.
Hope Summers, so a quick rundown for everyone who doesn't know X-Men history. After House of M, the mutant population was decimated to a couple of hundred mutants left. For the next few years, no mutants were born. Mutants were dying. They were pretty much in view of extinction. It was a very, very dark time for their comic world, which is phenomenal because it really shined on Scott Summers' Cyclops as a leader because there was no Professor X anymore. Hope was the first mutant to be born after M-Day. Cerebro exploded the day she was born. And in Messiah Complex, you had a couple of factions trying to grab her before the other did. You had the X-Men, You had the Purifiers with their crazy, crazy right wing stuff.
Yeah.
Then you had you had Mr. Sinister. You had all these people trying to get to her. But the two that made it closest were Cable and Bishop.
Bishop.
You're not going to like him in this series. Bishop, unfortunately, believes that she is the cause of the horrible future he came from. So he thinks if he kills her, you know, it won't happen. But Cable, on the other hand, is just trying to save the girl for Cyclops, which is his father.
Cable suddenly is just an all-around nice guy.
Yeah, Cable's the best. So by the end of Messiah Complex, it's decided that Cable will take her to the future, train her, raise her, bring her back. So they don't know what she's supposed to be. They don't know what significance she's supposed to have. They just know she's a mutant and she's the only mutant to be born, so that has to be significant. Unfortunately, Bishop follows Cable through time and damages his time, his whatever he's carrying that lets him go back and forth in time. He can only go forward in time now.
I still love Bishop.
Yeah, but he basically, Bishop is an extremist at this point. He is so wrapped up in this belief that he causes the destruction of every single continent on Earth just to give Cable less and less places to hide in the future, because he believes that once he kills Hope, it'll all change back and nothing he does will matter.
Well, he sounds like a very good tactician. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I'll give him that, but Cable's better.
I would also, on a quick side note, love to see that as a movie, because the Purifiers are
ridiculous.
Yeah, and then Mr. Sinister looks like a buff David Bowie. So I would rock the crap out of that movie.
Well, here's the best part, though. So when she finally does come back to the present after the 5 volumes of Cable, the new real threat is Bastion. Now, Bastion is kind of like a mix of Mother Mold and a Sentinel. So he's just pro-kill mutant. He actually revives every single major enemy using the technovirus that infected Cable when he was young. Resurrects William Stryker, the Right, the Purifiers, all of them, to do his bidding, to take out her and what's left of the X-Men in X-Men Second Coming. And that storyline, that whole trade, is just action-packed from beginning to end. It's sad, it's funny.
Yeah,
it's
gonna
perfect.
Do you have that as trades?
I do. I have all of it.
Boom, I'll trade you House of M for it.
You need to read House of M first, because it's pertinent to that storyline.
I don't have to do shit. I'm an American. Which brings me to the end. So I always like to ask people, you know, basically, you know, we met nearly 5 years ago. When you met me then, did you think he can go on to become a great American?
I did. You seemed so Americanized already, and I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna give this guy a chance, he could be American. And then he mocked me for not having my ID. I'm like, you know what, fuck this guy.
I wasn't gonna bring that up, but it's one of my favorite memories. Didn't they give you a little wristband?
Yes.
Yeah. So cute.
Not allowed to drink.
Yeah, I think that was the first time I met I'd met Alec before, but it was
the first time you met me, I think.
Yeah, but it was the first time I ever got to see that dynamic going. And damn, man. You got a lot of abuse that night. Well, I'm glad that... Am I still on track to become a great American?
Yeah.
I just want to be better than Jay Leno.
That's not hard.
Just setting my sights real low. And I always like to ask, which American should I follow? You know, who should be an inspiration to me? Because if I take everything that we've discussed today, I know that I need to get back into comics. You know, they're a big part of American life, especially considering right now we're getting no new comics, and it's this call with a cry. So who should I follow? It can be anyone. I mean, I've had A-Rod was a suggestion.
You should follow Oliver Queen, the Green Arrow.
They sadly have to be real.
Damn it. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I would say... I don't know. That's a hard one.
You let me down here. I thought you were going to go with, like, oh, you should follow Joss Whedon because he created everything you love.
He does. I love that, man. Could have been worse. I could have said Zack Snyder.
Oh.
Or Michael Bay. You know what? Michael Bay is the perfect American.
Right.
Explosions.
And the American flag in every other scene.
Yep. Yeah. Actually, now that I think about it, I think I can think of a director that you should model yourself after, an American. James Cameron.
Oh.
Pre-Avatar days.
What?
So early 90s James Cameron.
But that's still James Cameron that goes to the bottom of the ocean in an episode of South Park.
Yeah, to find the bar?
And he's going to raise it.
Oh, I love his theme song.
That episode, I remember when I watched it. It wasn't too long ago because you and I went through a South Park binge last summer and we were just talking about it all the time. Yeah, I watched the episode and I was just like, this is fucking weird. So weird.
Honey boo boo. I'll get a pig heart. I want that one. I want that one. It looked at me funny.
Such a weird episode.
Oh, man.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule.
Yes, I'm incredibly busy playing video games all day and reading what trades I haven't. Speaking of which, actually, I finally got almost every single trade for Sandman, and I'm ready to read it in completion.
Well,
it's really good.
You got the time.
I do.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go read... I want to reread The Man Without Fear.
Oh, Daredevil?
Yeah, I've got it.
That was such a good trade.
I didn't enjoy it that much the first time around.
Daredevil, Born Again, you definitely want to read. I know that's beaten to death as the best Daredevil comic, maybe the best Marvel comic I read, but it's that good.
It gets beaten to death, and then it's Born Again. The greatest Marvel comic ever written was Groot.
I haven't read it.
Yo, do yourself a favor. It's only like, I think it's only six issues. The premise is Groot has lost Rocket and he's trying to find him. He's going around the galaxy and he meets different characters that kind of fill in the journey. Like he hangs out with Silver Surfer for a bit. But the reason why I suggest it is the final issue, the final four pages are hands down the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
You need to read Second Coming.
I don't know, man. I don't know, Groot. But yeah, there was also a good issue. One of my favorite issues was written by Scott Young. It was in a Rocket and Groot comic. You're seeing a trend here. The whole issue is told from in Groot. So, and the reason why I liked it is it reminded me of being a kid again and not really understanding everything and just kind of having to follow the pictures. So yeah. But yeah, thanks. Thanks so much.
Of course. I'm here all day, so if you ever want to invite me back, feel free.
I'll see you tomorrow.